This is another podcast brought to you by Primetime Productions. Primetime Productions, you can find them on Twitter at Primetime Pods. They have a bunch of content coming out in every discipline, basketball, football, hockey, anything you want, college, professional, they got it all on there. Articles, gambling articles, opinion articles, podcasts, everything you want on Primetime Pods. That is at Primetime Pods on X.
It's Joe Scherr, it's Burge, it's Hogan, it's Kojak. We're back. We got the full crew back in action today. We got an absolutely electric episode for you boys and girls out there listening on the airwaves. I'm going to throw it to my boys real quick to get a quick sit rep on how we doing tonight. Burge, welcome the fuck back. Sorry about the eulogy. Hogan and I almost buried your ass last Tuesday. My bad. How you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm glad to be back to be able to speak and defend myself for listening to that. My God. No, it's nice to not be blowing chunks this week. This is like, I think it's been 3 weeks since I've been on with you guys because we had a week off and then I was sick last week. Like, fantastic to be back. Let's go.
Missed you.
Missed you. Hogan, you beautiful motherfucker with the new stream setup.
How we doing, bud?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, you and I had a little special something going on last week and it was fantastic, but I guess it's all right. We got these two clowns back in action with us, so we'll see how it goes.
First told us to get a room, and I was like, bro, do you just want the key card? Like, come on in.
I'll join. I'll be in on that, man. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Don't you tell me with a good time.
Kojak.
How we doing, buddy? I'm back in black. Sorry about last week, boys. I'm over here digging holes in the earth and putting buildings in them, so. Apologize.
Did you build the building and then bring it to the hole and then throw the building in the hole, or how did it kind of just run me through how kind of that?
That's a great question. So how are you guys doing?
As you can tell, we've had a good night tonight. We had a little bit of a recording with a guest earlier. We had Manish Mehta, formerly the Jets beat. On with Hogan, Burge, and myself. It was an unbelievable 40 minutes. Honestly, he was a super, super, super interesting guy. He knew a bunch about a bunch of different things. He gave us a kind of like an in-depth like analysis of kind of how trades go down and how who contacts who, what it's about. And what I will say is it sounds like your trades that you make in your little fantasy football league, you take them way more serious than these fucking GMs do in the NFL. Yeah. Let me just put it that way.
That insight was wild. That insight was wild.
I was shocked.
Look forward to all you guys hearing it a little bit later on here in the episode. But yeah, like you said, shout out to Manish. Thanks again for coming on. We're very excited to bring this interview to you guys later on in the episode.
All right, so we have a couple of things that we wanted to get to before the interview here. Most of them had to do with like free agency and the franchise tag coming up. I think one of the number one things we wanted to get to was more Patriots-centric, which was the Onwenu non-tag and the Duggar transition tag. But I think even bigger news kind of happened before that would be the Mike Evans signing. Burge, give me your thoughts on I don't think he got as much as we thought he was going to, but I was kind of shocked he went back to the Bucs as quick as he did.
Yeah, it tells me that they have some sort of plan with their quarterback, with Baker, whether Baker Mayfield's coming back or something. Like, they have something in place where he's going to make that decision to make that, you know, to sign that contract when he did. I think it's great for a guy like him. We've said it here on the pod plenty of times, like, he's one of the most underrated receivers over the last decade. He's so consistent. He's healthy. And it's great to see a player that, you know, it's more or less going to be him finishing his career out as a Buck. So it's pretty cool to see him stay with one team and finish there. But like I said, they got some sort of plan for quarterback because he wasn't going to sign there without some assurance from the organization that we got this under control.
Well, I think he put something out there. He was like, "I'm not. I want to go somewhere where I can contend and play with an elite quarterback." Mm-hmm. So you got to know that was either signaling to the fans like, "Yeah, we got this under control," or signaling to ownership like, "Yeah, I'll take this deal, but make sure you get it done with Baker." Hogan, what do you think about the Mike Evans deal? What do you think about the Bucks going forward here?
For me personally, I like it for Bucks, the team, and their fans. He's a phenomenal player, as Birch touched on. He's absolutely a first ballot Hall of Famer in my book with the production he's been able to do.
Oh, if he retired tomorrow, bro, first ballot.
A 1,000 yards every single year he's been in the league. He's absolutely, like, he should not be underrated. He should be rated. Like, he is that good of a like receiver. Like, anybody would be lucky to have him. And he kind of gets, I get the shade from him too, where it's, he was tagged with the Patriots a bunch of times where the trade potential was there, and it almost feels like a missed opportunity. I remember a lot of times we were talking about with Calvin Johnson when he was still in the league. Like, could you imagine Brady throwing Calvin Johnson the ball? That would have been phenomenal. And it would have been so amazing to see Evans in a Patriots uniform. It's not meant to be, but I'm happy for him. He deserves the money. He deserves what he's getting. And I hope for continued success with him, but just as long as it's not Baker Mayfield throwing him the fucking football.
Burnt orange.
Fuck Baker.
But no, I'm a huge Mike Evans guy. My favorite thing about Mike Evans is, like, he's wicked good. Obviously, first ballot Hall of Famer, perennial Pro Bowler, All Pro guy. Dude, but he's got some funny drops, bro. He's got some funny ass drops. Some funny ass. Dude, him and Jameis Winston are almost like a little bit similar. Like, you know what I mean? They're like a little bit clumsy, a little bit. You know what I mean? But you always see, dude, there's always like one or two a year. It's like Mike Evans has like 1,000 yards and like 10 touchdowns every fucking year. But if he caught every wide open ball that he had when he's behind the defense, he'd probably have like 1,200 yards and like 14 touchdowns. I'm just saying. I just think he's got some funny fucking drops. But let's pivot a little bit back to Tom Brady's former team. Speaking of one of Tom Brady's teammates down in Tampa, Tom Brady's former team, the New England Patriots, today came down that they put the transition tag different than the franchise tag. So I don't know. I think we all know here, but the franchise tag is the average of the top three or the top five at the position. And the top five, and then the transition tag is the top 10 at the position, fully guaranteed contract for 1 year. But franchise tag, if you franchise tag a player and another team offers him a contract and you don't match, you get draft compensation. But the transition tag, you have the opportunity to match, but you don't get draft compensation if you don't. So I like this move by the Patriots. I think it shows a commitment to Duggar, saying that we're willing to give you guaranteed money. You're important enough to give guaranteed money, but I don't think you're one of the best safeties in the game. And I think that even if you go to open market, we're still going to afford you, which I agree with. He's a good player. He's not a top three, top five safety in the game. Mm-hmm. I don't think. Hogan, what do you think? You're shaking your head, bud.
We hashed on this last week. You and I talking about him with the potential, what there could be. And, you know, I'm on record as saying, like, I appreciate him. He's a good player. He's not the greatest in the league. I did not want to see them throw the franchise tag on him. That's too much money for a player of his caliber at this point. Unfortunately, it comes down to the Patriots, if they want to match whoever's willing to give him the top dollar, like we talked about. Would I love to see him back at a cheaper deal? Absolutely. Is that going to happen now? Probably not. But it's also interesting to see if a team actually wants to go out of their way to give him stupid money. I mean, I hope the Patriots have the sense to be like, yeah, go for it, have him. I mean, but the real question is that lineman we talked about, what's going to happen with him? But I'll let Burge talk about it a little bit too, since he was MIA last week. He gets a chance to talk about Duggar.
Kyle Duggar, I love what he brings. He's a hard hitter. He's great in the run defense. He has his flaws a little bit in pass coverage, but I do agree he's a pretty big piece for the Patriots defense going forward. So I'm very happy to see that they're committed to bringing him back. I'm more upset that Onwenu didn't get the franchise tag. That really bothered me. I think he's, over the course of the last 4 years, has been one of, if not their best offensive lineman. He can play guard, he can play tackle, and he's just been he was a great find. I think he was a fifth round pick, so it was an unbelievable pickup there. to, you know, hit by my favorite goat, Bill Belichick, deep in the draft, which he's always been good at, but he's been an absolute stud for this offensive line. And them not reaching out and making a commitment to a player like that on a team that is going to be hurting on the offensive line going into next year really, really worries me, because his versatility and being able to play either position and play that position at a high level feels like somebody you'd want to kind of anchor your offensive unit, a team that's going to be more or less tearing down and rebuilding that offensive unit. He was one of the bright spots for that team last year. So why are we not at least committing to a full year of him? I don't understand it.
I hate saying this because it's kind of like a cop-out take, but there's got to be more to the story. Like, he's got to be asking for, like, crazy money. You know what I mean?
He did fire his agent. He did fire his agent, like, last week or something like that. So there was something going on there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, so good call-out by you. Good call-out by you. I want to bring it back. Something Hogan said. I forget what it was. Can't even remember what I started off the podcast with. Me. What I wanted to say is I think they're handling the Duggar situation very in parallel to how they handled the McCourty situation probably back in like 15, 16, in that time, where they were basically like, here's an offer, $8 million. I think it was $8 million a season. Go to the open market. If anybody matches it, if anybody like goes over the top, we'll match it. And he didn't get fucking anything. He came back, and I think it was like $8 million a season. Ended up being one of the highest paid safeties in the league, but I think D-Mac thought he was going to go out and get big money. So I know it's a different regime and everything like that, but I think hopefully they're just being prudent. They're showing a player that we're going to give you some guaranteed money, but we also don't think giving away the farm is the thing to do right now. So, boys, do you have any other quick hits on free agency franchise tag here?
I'm a little concerned from the Patriots standpoint. We know they need wide receivers and they need talent at that position. And seeing guys like Mike Evans go off the board, you see Michael Pittman go off the board. The market is continuously like just draining. Right on Michael Pittman.
Yep.
And like you see that happen, and the Patriots have so much cash to burn this year, especially after cutting J.C. Jackson. They have over $100 million in cap space. What, and you see this happen, it's like, come on, guys. Like, we need the talent, and it's not there this year. So I really hope that they don't overpay for mediocre talent. And that's part of why I'm so irked on the Nwenu situation. Because, like, you're seeing this happen. Like, why not retain some of your talent, what little of it you had on the team, given this market? Just – It worries me. It worries me a little bit about the approach right now. Obviously, it's March 5th. We haven't even hit free agency yet, so things can change. But right now, I'm a little concerned with them retaining their own talent.
Well, I mean, if you're concerned about them retaining their own talent, you're probably concerned about them going out and acquiring talent, right? Hogan, what do you think, buddy?
At this point, they won four games last year. The talent's not there. Let's be honest. I'm being honest. It's that's
no,
not
no,
there.
You bring up a good
that's
point
on there.
They're sucking ass.
They're a four win team. They're realistically not going to be, you know, vibing for the playoffs in this upcoming year with a rookie head coach. Nobody knows what the hell's going on at the quarterback position as of right now. I mean, is Mac Jones still on the fucking team? Like, I don't know. He shouldn't be, but either way, regardless, they're an ass team. They're going to be ass next year. To Burge's point, I don't want to see them spend money like they did when we brought in the Aguilars and the I know you love Kendrick Bourne, but he's still not a superstar receiver. Those guys just aren't going to build you that perennial team that's going to win games. And if you got to suck ass for a little bit longer to get the capital you need for the players that are going to be there either next year or the draft or what have you, build it naturally, do it cohesively. Do what Mayo wants until it doesn't work and then start over again. That's where I'm at this point.
Well, I think Burge leads it to a good point there. You know what I mean? It's like, I would rather give Onwenu a little above average market deal than go out and spend that money and overpay on a skill position player. You know what I mean? I would rather get a dynamite interior offensive lineman and lock him up than get a good, not great skill position player who you're overpaying for.
A good example of this is you're letting Onwenu go. Don't answer that with giving big money to a 33-year-old Tyron Smith.
Yes.
Like on the offensive line, if that's your fix. Like, don't do that, because now you're overpaying for a guy who's 33 who has had a significant injury history. Don't do that. Like, I'd rather have the guy that I know what he is and the ability to play both positions as needed. They can slide him around in the game, and I feel like he can do it. Like, he plays
above average at four or five positions on the offensive line.
Exactly.
The one thing with that, though, that I'm curious about is the whole timing with firing the agent with the whole franchise tag as well. The franchise tag is directly correlated to what position you play. And it's a huge thing where if he plays guard and tackle,
put him at,
that's where you can actually make the argument that he fired his agent. If the Patriots are sitting there trying to tag him as a guard and he's making $10 million less than a left tackle. Hey, I'm getting him out of it too.
Right tackle?
Oh yeah. Depending on which way the quarterback throws, if you're the blindside tackle or not, there's a huge,
I think
huge
it's just tackle. With that. I think I it's just tackle and guard. I don't think there's a left versus right.
Well, but I'm saying like there's a huge difference between
the delta in terms is of much, that. Yeah.
So you're talking about the tags. In terms of the franchise tag and the transition tag, it's offensive line. It's not broken down. I'm looking at referencing over the cap right now for this.
Really?
Oh, it's really.
The tags. It's not broken around.
Interior and exterior.
It used to be different. I know that.
So the franchise tag for an offensive lineman, almost $21 million.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's why.
There's your answer. There's your answer.
Why the Patriots didn't do it? Because on top of that, too, think the other way that I was going to go with that too is that if he did get franchise tagged and he doesn't want to be with the organization in the first place, like so you're franchising him for a ridiculous amount of money, and then he's going to walk regardless the year after. And you know, no team out there, going back to your point, Joe, is like if you franchise tag a guy and you trade him, that's two first round picks, unless that's changed and I didn't know about it. But that's what happened with multiple players, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. If you want an answer for why we didn't franchise him, there's a couple of inklings right there to tell you why. But at the same time, it doesn't alleviate the pain of him leaving.
But dude, the whole fucking thing is like, I know it's under a different regime, but didn't they franchise tagged a guard 2 years ago?
Joe Tooney.
Yeah.
Joe Tooney. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they let him walk the year after.
Exactly. Whatever.
That's it. That could be a repeat of this. That's all I'm saying. But, so you never
know. Is right, dude. Just have a fucking plan. If you're gonna do this, have a fucking plan. Don't go out and throw money at dudes. Have a plan.
The plan better not be signing 33-year-old Tyron Smith to replace him. That's the point that I'm making. There better be, all right, we're letting him walk. We're going to address the offensive line and the tackle position high in the draft for a second round. Like that's where my mind is. If you're letting somebody like that go, because at the end of the day, it's money. They have money to burn, and I know they have a lot of holes to fill. And $20 million against the cap, even with $100 million for one player, that's a fifth year cap in one player.
Yeah, spending 20% of your open cap on a guard is just not prudent spending.
Exactly. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, but on the flip side, you probably have the Patriots brass, right? Not a lot has changed since Bill left, right? Like, Bill left, like, the decision maker left, but a lot of the infrastructure that he had was there, you know what I mean? So, like, you have this regime that drafted Mike Onwenu in the fifth round. So, obviously, you want to pay the guy and keep him in-house, but you also have a regime that's like, dude, we can find another fifth-round interior offensive lineman fucking anywhere, you know what I mean? Which I kind of agree with.
I think Onwenu was more valuable at the tackle position than he was at guard, personally.
Agreed.
Playing right tackle, put him there and let him sit there. And you don't ever have to worry about it. You never heard his name. You hardly ever heard his name when he played right tackle. So
You're right.
Tackle's a lot harder to find than guard.
And I think he honestly would have been a better solution at left guard, left tackle. But I don't think
whatever. I think I'm a big Onwenu guy. It kind of sucks that they didn't tag him. But I understand that paying $21 million for essentially a guard. I know you can play him somewhere else, but somebody who's played guard his majority of his career is kind of
a tough look, especially when is there another $20 million player on the Patriots? If your fucking guard is the highest paid player on your team.
Problem.
Yeah. I'm going down a rabbit hole. It's just going to make
that's a bad. Problem. Exactly. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I was just going to get pissed off. All right, boys. Well, let's throw it to our interview with Manish. I hope you guys enjoy it. Hopefully he'll be on again. Hope you guys enjoy.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Breaking the Plane podcast.
Today we have a very, very special guest joining Burge, Hogan, and I. It's Manish Mehta, a NFL analyst. How are you today, Manish?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing?
Everybody knows, but I recently moved. So I'm just doing shit 24/7. I'm raking.
I'm rolling a wall with paint.
I'm replacing the screen on my slider because my dog ran through it within the first 5 minutes of getting here. So it's kind of been a hodgepodge. So how are the other boys doing here?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks again, Manish, for coming on with us. Real excited to get in and talk the NFL with you. Joe's finding out what it's like to be a homeowner. So it's kind of fun. It's funny. Myself, I've owned a home now over 5 years, so I know what he's going through. So it's nice to see somebody else suffer like I had to.
I'm the same as well. It's fantastic to see him struggling. But otherwise, yeah, we're happy to have you. So thanks for being here.
Of course. It never ends, Joe. Let me tell you, home ownership, there's always something.
Yeah, I was just talking to my dad, and he was just like, oh, you think it's fun now? Wait until you have everything perfect, and it all goes to shit. You have to change it all. Yep, yep.
That's what you have to look forward to, that's for sure.
Yeah, look forward to. Duck and cover. And my wife's super handy though, so I can't say that I'm doing it all myself. But thank God she weighs like half as much as I do, because like all the ladders and the step stools we have are so rickety, and I'm not losing weight. I'll tell you that. we're going the other way. All right, let's get into it. We BS enough on the podcast. We don't want to waste time here. So I just want to jump right in. I feel like as a kind of Patriots oriented NFL podcast, I kind of want to go right to the top of the draft. This is going to end up being this third pick, or what they do at the top of the draft here, is going to end up being probably franchise altering or franchise kind of direction setting here. So the first, how I want to frame this first is, what are your opinions on what's going to happen at one? And are you 100% sold that a quarterback is going one if it's the Bears or a trade happens?
Well, yeah, I'm 100% sure it's going to be a quarterback. I'm 100% sure it's going to be – or not 100% sure, because I think the last time I thought that Sam Darnold went third and Baker Mayfield went first, and I thought the Browns were going to take Darnold at one. So I guess nothing's 100%, but I'm fairly confident just reading the tea leaves over the last several weeks and, you know, what Ryan Poles said, the general manager from the Bears, that they are going to take a quarterback. It's going to be, in all likelihood, Caleb Williams. He's scheduled to meet with Chicago maybe this week. It's, you know, fairly quickly after the combine, which is unusual. I mean, obviously, you've got the top 30 visits before the draft begins, but to have a prospect, you know, coming to your facility that quickly after the combine is atypical. So I think that, you know, barring, you know, something unforeseen, that Caleb Williams will be the guy. And that ultimately means, of course, what are the Bears going to get in return for Justin Fields, and who's going to want to pony up the draft capital? I've been around these things long enough to know that these discussions, these trade discussions, happen even before the combine. When the Jets traded up with Indianapolis to be in position to take Sam Darnold, who they thought was going to be Baker Mayfield, ironically, with the third pick, those initial discussions happened at the Senior Bowl. So I would be stunned if Ryan Poles, you know, didn't initiate some conversation with teams about their interest level in Justin Fields, you know, dating back to Mobile and in the Senior Bowl week. So I think at this point, the fact that he hasn't been traded is probably more of an indication that the return that the Bears are getting and the offers that they have aren't exactly what they want. But I'd be shocked if Justin Fields wasn't moved before the draft. Then, you know, I would be really surprised if Caleb Williams isn't their pick on the first night of the draft.
Now, forgive me for not having this knowledge already, but I think this would be a great opportunity. I've always wondered, how does that conversation start? Like, does Paul go to another GM who he's suspecting needs a quarterback and be like, hey, just FYI, Fields is available, what do you think? And is it on them, or would it be more like, hey, I'm looking to like offload Fields for a second or third, like warm, cold, am I on the money? Like, how does that conversation start and work, if you do have any, like, if you are privy to how that happens?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I can tell you from a previous big trades in recent NFL history, I'll give you a little insight on the Darnold one since I had mentioned it a minute ago. Their assistant general manager approached the Colts assistant general manager at the combine to kind of get feelers out for Mike Maccagnan, who was the Jets general manager at the time. And there's existing relationships, obviously, between NFL executives throughout the years, you know, whether they've crossed paths on the scouting trails. You know, these guys, by and large, were all scouts before they were general managers. And in terms of who initiates the conversation, it kind of just it is a case-by-case basis. Obviously, the situation that I'm talking about, the Jets were more desperate to move up than the Colts were to move down. So the Jets initiated those conversations. In a situation like this with Chicago, I think it's fairly certain that the Bears are not going to carry two quarterbacks. So, I would imagine it probably depending on the team as well. The conversations could have been initiated by Ryan Poles. They could have been initiated by general managers or assistant general managers, top level executives on other teams. But you know, there's a lot of commingling at the Senior Bowl when these general managers and scouts, assistant GMs, they're all on the sideline watching the same players practice during Senior Bowl week. The casual conversations happen. I don't think it's a, let's put a meeting on the calendar type of situation. I mean, that's not been my understanding, throughout the years. It's pretty casual and informal. And then when these guys get back to their respective cities and their buildings, that's when, they'll make a call, text, whatever the mode of communication is. But the feelers are out there really on the practice field at Mobile. It's funny because, depending on how savvy you are as a reporter, you can kind of sit in the stadium where the practices are happening, or you can kind of finagle your way onto the sideline. I'm not saying that I've ever done that, but you can kind of do that and get a better understanding of what's happening. You're not obviously eavesdropping on conversations, but you're seeing who's talking to who. And then if you have a relationship with a general manager, when those conversations with other general managers are done, you can kind of come up to them and kind of talk to them. They're obviously not going to disclose, the particulars and state secrets or anything of that matter. But you kind of get a handle whether, a team is interested in a particular player, moving a particular player. There's also player agents at the Senior Bowl. Those guys are sitting in the stands. You can sit down and talk to, anybody you want that you've got a relationship with or want to strike up a relationship with and sit there for an hour, talking and finding out, what's going on with their clients and so on and so forth. So it's a much more casual environment than I think most fans would think in terms of like when these big deals are born. They're really born in those types of moments where, they're just kind of, shooting the shit, for lack of a better word. And, they initiate conversations and they become more serious as the weeks go on. So, long story short, I think the Bears have had all of those conversations. I think they have a pretty good handle on which team or teams are serious about Justin Fields. And I would be stunned if it wasn't right now a matter of posturing and trying to squeeze out better draft compensation from a Bears perspective. But, when it's all said and done, Justin Fields is going to be moved. And again, barring anything unforeseen, I'd be surprised if the quarterback they don't take is Caleb Williams.
Now, I want to ask you this here. Do you think that the reason that Justin Fields hasn't been traded yet is because the Bears maybe are holding out to see if somebody's going to come in over the top and just completely blow them away for trade compensation for that number one pick? Because, as the draft gets closer, these teams end up – look at Carolina last year with the Bears, came out and blew them away with an offer and traded the pick. Do you think that's still a possibility?
I wouldn't rule anything out because, again, the minute that you rule something out, that something always happens and you look like a fool. So,
the Texans take Mario Williams at one.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody thought Reggie Bush was going to be the number one pick. It didn't happen. So, sure, could there be some kind of godfather offer for the number one pick? I guess. But, again, if you're the general manager, the head coach, and you're already, one foot out the door with Justin Fields, where you're entertaining offers and have some semblance of a framework of a deal, some kind of incredible blockbuster offer that could blow you away might make you think twice about trading the number one pick. But if you're not fully invested in Fields, and remember, this group, this front office and head coaching staff, has seen Fields now, so they know what they think of him. I'm not saying I disagree or agree with what their evaluation of Fields is. But clearly, they're ready to move on. So, yeah, would those extra picks look great? Absolutely. And if it's something outrageous, I mean, I guess you would seriously have to consider it. But I think for all intents and purposes, their mind is made up on that quarterback, on Fields. They don't think that – I don't believe that they think that he is their franchise quarterback. But, yeah, you know, what time offers is the possibility of another team, as you said, Birch, to come in with some kind of monster trade package. But, again, any kind of trade offers that are coming in now, and they're not formal offers. They're just kind of two guys talking, two general managers talking, hey, would you do like a, would you move down five spots and take a one next year and a two next year and maybe a two and a three the following year? You know, something like loose. I mean, they've had those conversations already. So I think they have a good idea of what some of these offers are. There's been, reports, as you would expect during Combine Week, about some teams who are exploring trading up. But, if there was something tangible that they could grasp onto and say, hey, Team X really wants this pick, and this offer that they gave us now is far beyond what any other team has offered, but still not good enough. I mean, if we hold out a little bit longer, do you think they'd cave and give us an extra one? I mean, I guess that's possible, but that's typically not how the dynamic works when you're talking specifically about the number one pick. Now, trading up, that can go right up until draft day, right, during the draft. But when you're talking about the number one overall pick, I think the framework of what the offers are pretty much in hand at this point for Ryan Poles.
I think I just hope I see I don't want to call it middling, but like sometimes you could call the Bears like a little bit of a sad franchise the last whatever 40 years. But I think the way they've manipulated the draft the last couple of years has been like such a cool thing to see. And I hope they come out on the other side with like some fruits of their labor. Cause I think I've been impressed with what Poles can do. I think the sweat trade at the deadline last year, DJ Moore, I think there's a bunch of little breadcrumbs you can kind of see all over that organization of kind of like Poles making a lot of like prudent decisions. And I mean, hopefully what they do at one's not another one. I kind of want to dovetail off the Caleb Williams conversation. And so this is more of a Patriots geared question, you could probably see, but like, who do you, if you take Caleb Williams out of the equation here, who is the second best quarterback in this draft, in your opinion?
Well, full disclosure, I'm not a college football guru. I think the most college football I watched actually was in the run up to that Baker, Darnold, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen draft, just because I knew that the Jets were, quote unquote tanking and they were going to be in position to draft a quarterback. So I got my fill of USC, UCLA games. I think I only watched one Josh Allen game because his team, they were never on TV. I think they were on CBS or some random channel that I happened to catch once. I saw a little bit of Lamar Jackson actually in college as well. So, I don't profess to be a quarterback guru for this 2024 class, but just based on people that I've talked to that do this for a living and actually do evaluate the quarterbacks, the guy that I have always liked, and not to say that I don't like Caleb Williams, because if so many people in the industry, and when I say industry I mean the scouting industry, think he's going to be a quality player, I'm sure they know a lot more than I've ever forgotten, but or forgotten ever more than I've ever known. But the guy that impresses me is Jaden Daniels a lot. And no disrespect to Drake May, but I think if you're looking for a guy who can be a dynamic impact player, not an MVP caliber player, obviously, right away, but a guy who can make a real difference sooner rather than later, I think Jaden Daniels would be the guy that I would take over Drake May. J.J. McCarthy is actually an interesting player, and maybe he's the guy – who doesn't get as much pub as the the quote unquote big three in Caleb Williams, May, and Daniels. But I like McCarthy, and maybe it's because I saw a lot of his college games as well, because they were on TV all the time. But I do think that getting back to the Patriots, they're really in an interesting position because there's a lot of different ways you can go about it. When I think about building an offense, because the Patriots, even though they won four games, they're not building over, because their defense is a solid defense, maybe not the best defense, but there's so many games last year where they did a terrific job. And with Belichick gone, I mean, will that markedly change? I don't think so, because I think Jerod Mayo being a part of that staff for as long as he's been will be able to, you know, keep that defense in that upper tier. I mean, whether that means an elite defense or, you know, a very good defense, I don't know. But what I will say is that it won't be a bad defense. So when you're talking about rebuilding the Patriots, I really think that you're talking about rebuilding one side. So it's rebuilding the offense. And there's three ways you can go about it. Do you, you know, get a, you know, a veteran quarterback or draft a quarterback? Do you make sure you fortify the offensive line, which is obviously going to have some significant holes this year, this offseason for the Patriots? Or do you get some dynamic playmakers? And they're in sore need of dynamic playmakers. So they don't have dynamic playmakers. There's what, at least two offensive linemen, or, well, one for sure, Trent Brown, who's not going to come back. And when you, you know, frankly, I'm a little surprised they didn't put some kind of tag designation on him today.
Mm-hmm. We were bitching all day in the group chat about that.
Yeah, you know, and look, Kyle Duggars, who got the transition tag, is a really good player. It's an interesting choice. They saved about $3.5 million on giving him the transition tag instead of the franchise tag. Now, you know, even though they can match an offer from another team, if he does sign with another team, they get no draft pick compensation back. But they obviously believe that he's a part of their future. Otherwise, you know, transitioning him wouldn't make sense. And frankly, if you look at all the franchise tags and you know, the lone transition tag, the one that surprised me, you know, the most, Kyle Duggar or probably, you know, Michael Pittman Jr. We can talk about that another time, but. You know, I think that the three ways to attack it, if you're Jerod Mayo, if you're Elliott Wolf, is what we want to do. Do we just want to, you know, start scratch with a new head coach and a new quarterback, have those two pieces grow together? I mean, that can work. You know, you kind of backtrack about a decade or so, and the Jets did that with Rex Ryan and Mark Sanchez. And even though they didn't have long-term success, they had extremely good short-term success going to AFC championship games in the first 2 years that those two guys were together. It can also backfire with, you know, keeping in that same organization with the Jets, Robert Saleh, Zach Wilson. Obviously that didn't go anywhere. So do you want Jerod Mayo to grow with Drake May or Jaden Daniels and take one of those two guys at the third pick? Or do you want to, you know, fortify the offensive line? Joe Alt will be available. I would say that taking a, dynamic offensive playmaker would be third on my preference list if you're growing a team, because, you know, you're picking at three. Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be staring you at your face. You know that he could be a Patriot if you wanted him to be. But I think that just given the roster dynamics on the offensive side of the ball that New England has, taking a special wide receiver when you really don't know what your offensive line is going to be and you don't know who your long-term solution at quarterback is going to be doesn't make as much sense than going all in with a quarterback that you believe in. And that's really the key. I mean, you know, the four of us can talk about they should take Drake May if he's there. They should take Jaden Daniels. Maybe they trade down, because I don't think there's a need to take J.J. McCarthy at three, but maybe they trade down with, you know, Atlanta, who is at eight, and they need a quarterback. They could be looking to trade up to three. And then there's a sweet spot, I think, 11, 12, and 13, Vikings, Broncos and Raiders, I think, are 11, 12, and 13. You know, they're all potentially in the market for a quarterback, depending on how free agency unfolds. Would the Patriots be willing to move down that far from 3 to 11, 3 to 12, 3 to 13? Because if you did that, you would get a boatload of draft picks for Jerod Mayo, Elliott Wolf to rebuild the team over the next, you know, rebuild the offense specifically over the next 2 to 3 years. So there's a lot of different schools of thought, but ultimately, taking the quarterback and not fully believing in that specific quarterback, whoever it is foolish just to take a quarterback. So let's say they love Jaden Daniels, not sold on May or you know, J.J. McCarthy or, you know, anybody else really in the first round. And let's just say, you know, Jaden Daniels is gone. Let's say Washington takes him at two after Caleb Williams goes one and Drake May is staring you in the face. You know, you and I could say that makes sense. Why don't you just take Drake May? But if their evaluation comes back with, we don't like Drake May, you don't just take him because he's a quarterback. So, I mean, that's something that we don't know. We don't know what Elliott Wolf thinks. We don't know what Jerod Mayo is thinking. I think the safer option would be to take a veteran quarterback, sign a veteran quarterback in free agency. You know, there's a lot of whispers about Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta. I think that'd be an incredible fit. he'd be a good scheme fit for the Patriots because they're running that West Coast style of offense with Alex Van Pelt. The other thing that I'm sure you guys have talked about is that with Baker Mayfield as a unrestricted free agent not being tagged, I mean, not the sexiest guy in the world, really didn't play well.
He is a runway model to me, dude. He's sexy.
There is a connection. I mean, sure, you guys know Alex Van Pelt was his offensive coordinator in Cleveland for a couple of years. And if you look at Baker's career outside of this past year, but if you look specifically at his career in Cleveland, he had a really good rookie season. But other than that rookie season, I would argue that his 2020 season with Alex Van Pelt as his offensive coordinator was his best as a Cleveland Brown. So again, it's not going to move the needle. You know, I can tell you guys are thrilled with the idea, but if you drafted a Baker Mayfield, signed a Baker Mayfield or, a veteran guy for 2024, you could fortify your offensive line, get a Joe Alt if you want. The other question, of course, becomes when's the next time the Patriots are going to draft third? I mean, when are the next time they're going to be in position to take a quarterback? Because it's easy to kick it down the road if you're a fan and say, hey, we'll just draft a quarterback next year. Well, what if they're picking 10th next year and the quarterback's not available for them? So a lot of complicated questions, but ultimately I've always believed, and just talking to other GMs and head coaches throughout the years, is that if you don't believe specifically in that particular player, it doesn't matter what position he plays, because ultimately you're probably not going to be successful.
That's a really good point.
Really quickly, the reason I was shaking my head about the whole Baker Mayfield thing, I'm a huge Texas fan, so I can't stand him. That's just my forte on that. So I'm on record as hating Baker Mayfield. I want nothing to do with him. Just really quickly, I wanted to ask, get kind of the whole out with the old, in with the new stuff. What are your thoughts on Belichick not landing a job after the tenure he had with the Patriots? I know the whole backstory with the Jets thing too on top of that, but just what are your thoughts overall about him? I mean, Vrabel was kind of surprised too, but Belichick really was like the, wow, this guy didn't get a job. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm shocked. I frankly thought that Bill going to Atlanta was a done deal. And even the idea of Bill Belichick getting a second interview and then not getting the job, who could conceive of that? I thought that there were some inherent structural issues in Atlanta's front office, specifically Rich McKay, their team president for a long time, really has the ear of Arthur Blank. Rich is a great guy, but the structure has been the same, for such a long time. I didn't know how Belichick would fit into that. I figured that both Rich McKay and Belichick would be able to work together. I frankly thought that was the best place for him. And it's one of the reasons why I think one of the most intriguing hires is Raheem Morris, because this guy's going into the weakest division in the NFL with just incredible young offensive skill position talent with the Kyle Pitts, Drake London, the two running backs, Bijan and Algier. All they need is a quarterback. And I know that sounds flippant, but if you sign Kirk Cousins, who's played in a dome the last few years, if he is healed from his Achilles, it would be in such a great position for Atlanta to take that next step. I thought it made all the sense in the world for Bill to get that job. The fact that he didn't, frankly, surprised me. I would be stunned. I know people think, maybe he's going to ride off into the sunset. I would be stunned if he didn't get another opportunity somewhere next year. And I think ultimately when it's said and done, he is going to be the all-time winningest head coach. And I don't think he's riding it out just for that. He's a brilliant head coach. I don't know how you guys feel about him. Even though they stunk last year, I thought he did a great job with the defense. I don't think the game's passed him by. I think that's foolish. I think that's silly to even think that. I think that he's going to get another opportunity, and he's going to do an incredible job wherever that opportunity comes.
Bears, I'm about to turn your fucking camera off, bro. Chill out. Put your hands back on. I heard you hit the table. I heard it hit the table when he started talking, dude. Relax, bro.
Not a big fan of Bill, huh?
No, I'm a big fan of Bill the coach. I think the game has passed him by in the front office. I do not.
I agree. No, Joe, totally agree. I'm not saying I should have clarified that.
Hold on a second.
What'd you say?
You're completely right, Joe. You can cut that.
That's all we need.
I do think that he needs a really good talent evaluator to do that part of the job. Bill the GM has not been good.
This is your point about the Atlanta Falcons even more. They have a great infrastructure to pick players. You ran through their offensive skill position. They got effing 600 yards out of Jonnu Smith. Are you kidding me, bro?
Yeah, they cut him. So look, I agree with you.
They cut Jonnu Smith too? How did I
guess that? Yeah, they did.
I love crapping on
him. Well, maybe the Patriots can bring him back. You never know.
We were having a good time.
I agree with you about Bill, the personnel evaluator, talent evaluator. He shouldn't be the general manager. But in terms of X's and O's, preparing a team week in and week out, in my lifetime, I haven't seen anybody better.
And I think that whole thing comes – I think that most successful teams now just have a front office and a head coach that are just aligned, right? You have a head coach who has a voice in the room. It's like, I don't know. I think we're going away from – in all sports, I think we're going away from, like, a unilateral person that makes all, like, sporting decisions, like, i.e. Bill Belichick, i.e. Phil Jackson, people like that. Do you guys have any more thoughts on kind of this part of the I kind of want to get into more like free agency stuff if you guys are good with pitching about Bill still, because he's right where we are, Barry, sitting behind a computer right now. But so I want to dig up some stuff from the the what kind of happened over the last like 24 hours in the free agency, especially in New York, where you're kind of where your specialties lie. What's going on with Saquon? Are you against paying a running back? And after all of that, where do you think is his best fit if he leaves?
Yeah, I don't believe in paying running back big money unless that running back happens to be Christian McCaffrey, who to me is a unicorn. He dealt with some injuries the last several years, but you saw this past season, if he's healthy, how much of a difference he can make. Unfortunately,
good team.
Christian McCaffrey's don't grow on trees. So to me, he's in a category all by himself. But Saquon Barkley has an injury history. I think he's extremely talented. I thought he was, incredible player in college, coming out of college, even his rookie season, so dynamic. But you can't get away from the injuries. And the idea of committing, $25, $30 million to a running back, I just don't think it makes that much sense in today's NFL. If you have a young, dynamic running back who's on a rookie deal, like in the AFC East, Breece Hall, you're not paying him, dynamic player, I mean, that's fine. But this idea of paying a running back big money, to me, doesn't make much sense. Last year, I know the Giants wanted to extend Barkley. It didn't happen. That's why they gave him the franchise tag. I don't think it really made much sense this year. In terms of where a good fit is, look, he can fit in anywhere. Now, ironically, I don't think, the team that I think that he would benefit from the most from, which I don't believe he's going to end up there because I don't think they're going to pay big running back money. But I think it'd be a really intriguing fit if he went to the Chargers, because that would add another dynamic weapon for Justin Herbert, a younger weapon for Justin Herbert, because the guys he has, Austin Eckler, unrestricted free agent, he's aging. Keenan Allen, terrific player, aging. I don't know what they're going to do with their first round pick. They can, in theory, draft one of those elite wide receivers. I don't think they would take Brock Bowers, but they could get a weapon for Justin Herbert. Barkley, to me, makes a lot of sense. But if you're looking at what Barkley's market value is, he's probably going to get a three-year deal. That seems to make the most sense. Coming in maybe shade under $10 million a year. The guarantees would probably total around $20 million, something in that neighborhood. I don't know if Jim Harbaugh would want to do that, but just from a, take the money aside, which I know you can't do, but from a football X's and O's standpoint, having Barkley, who in many respects is just a younger version of Austin Eckler, to play with Justin Herbert and Jim Harbaugh would really be fascinating to see.
Dude, 3 years, 20 guaranteed, under 10 a year.
You think it's going to be more?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be twice as much. I thought he was going to get north of 15. But now you lay it out as you can kind of see, I mean, what, 60, or this will be, so 5 seasons in the league and what, 3.5 or three of them shortened by injury.
Yeah, so, and I think he's like 27. His injury history will not help him and not help his cause out. Running backs are interesting. I don't know how it's going to unfold this year, but typically free agency, you got to wait until that, like toward the end of the first week of free agency or a second week, before any kind of market really develops, because they have been devalued financially, as we know with all the running backs talking about it a year ago, really, in the offseason. I can't imagine a scenario where Saquon Barkley or any of the running backs, whether it's Josh Jacobs, clearly not Eckler because he's older, Derrick Henry, who's about 30 years old. I mean, he's probably going to get a one-year deal or a two-year deal with a fake second year. At about I don't know, 7 to 9 million, something like that. Yeah, I can't see a scenario where Barkley's going to have an average annual value of $15 million. I mean, I'm sure that's what he wants, but you know, given his injury history and the realities of the position, I would suspect that, you know, if he can get 10, a real 10, not a fake 10 with the way these contracts are structured, a real 10, I think actually would be a win for him in a multi-year set.
Well, damn. Well, shout out Saquon. I want 50 mil a year too. But, if you're listening, come on the pod, Saquon. Yeah. So I just want to, I have a Patriots specific question, and it's about a player we already talked about, but I always have this question about every player that's like good for a New England sports team is what is the public perception of like how it went down with like Mac Jones in New England? Like, do you like, is there, so there's a New England, there's two schools of thought in New England, right? Crybaby tennis brat wouldn't have been successful no matter what. And Bill Belichick loaded his diaper with poo-poo and then called him poo-poo diaper. So like, there's like two schools of thoughts. It's like, did he get screwed or is he screwed? What is your opinion? And I guess if you could maybe have like a, like an overarching opinion that you've seen outside the New England fan base.
Well, I think the perception of Mac Jones around the league, there's two perceptions. One is NFL people and one is just general fan base. You know, I think fan bases across the league just don't think he's a very good player. I think people in league circles, you know, evaluators, coaches, think he's much better than the average fan thinks. And if you're being honest about it, I mean, he didn't really have that many good weapons. And look, there's a lot of quarterbacks that don't have good weapons and they can still rise above and play at a good level. What I think is fascinating, and I'm sure you guys talked about this a couple years ago, maybe, you know, you're even talking about it now, but the Mac Jones as a rookie with Josh McDaniels was so much different than he was over the last couple years. And I don't know if it was just, he hit the ground running coming out of Alabama, or if there was a real tangible impact that McDaniels made. I tend to think it's the latter. I think that the OC actually matters, and it would have been interesting to see how Jones's career would have unfolded and evolved if he had Josh McDaniels as his OC, you know, throughout the duration of his career. You know, changing offensive coordinators isn't easy. I know it sounds like excuse making, but trust me, I mean, covering the Jets for 15 plus years, you know, I see what constant, you know, that constant churn and turnover of offensive coordinators does to a young quarterback. So I'm not saying that Mac Jones would have been this all-pro caliber quarterback if Josh McDaniels were there, but I certainly think that he'd be further along in his development than he is right now, because he has to regress. I think, you know, I'm stating the obvious here. You know, it's unfortunate. I think he can have a decade-long career in the NFL as a backup. He'd be one of the better backups in the NFL. I just think that, you know, everything has its time and place, and it runs its course at one place. And, you know, on a parallel level, Zach Wilson, you know, hasn't had nearly the amount of success as Mac Jones has had. But, you know, his time has come and gone with the Jets. If he gets rehabilitated in any way, it'll be somewhere else. I think the same goes with Mac Jones. You know, I mean, could you keep Mac as a backup? I mean, I think probably makes sense. You know, you're not paying him. He's on another year in his rookie deal, right? You're obviously not going to pick up his fifth year option. But, you know, I think there's so many different factors at play. When you're having a discussion, you always want to hone in on what's the reason. Why did this guy suck, right? Why didn't it work out? But it's never that simple. The answer is never that simple. There's so many different elements at play, whether it's protection, whether it's coaching, whether it's, playmaking ability, and whether it's the quarterback himself. I mean, all four of those components play a role in whether a young quarterback grows and develops. And unfortunately for Mac, you know, he had different systems, different coordinators, really didn't have dynamic playmakers around him, the offensive line, you know, middling at best. So, not a great situation for him. He wasn't good enough to rise above it. I mean, if you just look at the elite players at the position, Joe Burrow, even though he had, you know, he's got two dynamic wide receivers, you know, he overcame one of the worst offensive lines in football to take his team to a Super Bowl. So
you took the Bengals to a Super Bowl, dude. That's all you got to effing say, bro. Like,
yeah, I mean, you're a special talent. Like that. You can overcome that. I also think, you know, and this is something maybe we'll never really know, but Nick Saban's relationship with Bill Belichick, you know, they're so close. You know, Bill trusts Nick's, you know, feedback and information and evaluation so much, you know, maybe a little bit too much in the case of Mac Jones. I don't know, but yeah, there's no one right answer to what went wrong with Mac Jones. But I think that you got to cut the cord at some point. And the idea of like going forward with Mac Jones as a starter, competing for a starting job in New England, you know, it makes no sense at this point.
Give me a machete. I'll cut that cord myself. boys, if we don't have any more questions, I just got one question to finish up here. And then Manish, we'll let you go. But so we do this a lot. We kind of do like superlatives and stuff like that. Just kind of thrown in just a little bit of content. I am blindsiding you. So everybody listening, this is a blindside. So I want this off the top. So I want a dark horse team that nobody's thinking about that might make a push. It could be anything. It could be a top five team becoming a playoff team and maybe winning a game, or it could be a middling team or a barely playoff team making the Super Bowl. And then I want the inverse. I want somebody who might be pie in the sky mighty right now that might have a little bit of a falling back to earth in the 24-25 season.
All right. Okay. That's a good question. Now, let me ask you a question as I start to answer this question. Now, are the Packers a dark horse team to make it to the Super Bowl, because they were a fashionable team at the end of last year?
We've greased that pole. We've greased that.
All right, so let's go. Okay, let me go to the AFC. I think this team is going to make the playoffs in a division that isn't particularly easy, given who the best team in that division is. But it wouldn't surprise me if the Chargers made a deep run. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to pick them, but if you're talking about a team that didn't make the playoffs last year, that can, you know, make some noise, make the playoffs, and maybe even, you know, go far in the playoffs. I'm just a big believer in Jim Harbaugh. I think he's a quirky guy, but I think the guy has such a proven track record of lifting programs, lifting teams, improving quarterbacks who've got talent, and, you know, I'm so biased because I'm such a Justin Herbert fan. And if you're looking at a quarterback who's got so much untapped potential, despite having a lot of individual, you know, statistical success in his career to this point, it's Justin Herbert. And if there's any coach, especially of the guys who were just hired, who can bring out superstardom in that guy, I think it's Jim Harbaugh. Again, they've got some offensive line concerns. They have some aging weapons. So I'll be curious to see, you know, what they do with their fifth pick in the draft. But I just think that that's a team, when you have a quarterback like that with that much skill and potential, that's a team that would not surprise me. I don't know if they're going to win the AFC West because of the Chiefs and Mahomes, but I do think that that's a team that can really do some damage. And I think that, you know, Justin Herbert could have the type of season that Justin Herbert, you know, excuse makers like me will finally have something to stand on. I just think that that's a team that, you know, they didn't make the playoffs last year. They can do some, you know, make some noise and really have a terrific season. In terms of who's going to fall, I'll preface this again, because this team made it to the playoffs. They won double digit games, but they had such a bad last month and a half. I mean, do the Eagles qualify as a team that could
not? Yes. No, fuck the Eagles. No, they're going to suck.
I think the Eagles are a team.
Fuck yeah. That was my answer 2 weeks ago. Thank you. Let's go.
Right. They were 10-1, you know, then they went on this massive slide. Maybe I'm in the minority. I don't know, but I've never really been a big believer in Jalen Hurts. Not saying that Jalen Hurts is a bad quarterback. He's clearly not. But I always thought that after they lost to the Chiefs, you know, two Super Bowls ago, specifically in the Philadelphia area, because I live in the Philadelphia area, so I hear it. He was so overrated. They had him on par with Patrick Mahomes, which is laughable now. I thought it was laughable at the time.
Fucking crazy.
He, you know, he had a really good season, but statistically, as a passer and a decision maker, I've never really been that impressed. I think he's a middling player. I think he's like a 10 to 15, if you're going to rank a quarterback, somewhere in that 10 to 15 area. They're a team that's going to have to make some significant upgrades and changes on the defensive side of the ball. They were so bad on defense last year. They got torched in their wild card loss to Baker Mayfield. They've got a lot of young players. They've got older guys, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, guys who are probably going to retire.
He retired yesterday.
Yeah, and on the offensive line, you got their captain, their leader. Really, ironically, their center is the face of the franchise for the last decade in Jason Kelce. So I think there's a lot of work that Howie Roseman needs to do. And again, their defense was frighteningly bad at the end of last season and in the playoffs. They're going to have so much work to do. Just Jalen Hurts clearly took a step back last year, not really a believer in him. So if there's a team that, made the playoffs, won double-digit games this year that I think could miss the playoffs next year, I think Philadelphia would fit that category.
Fuck yeah, I agree. Couldn't agree more. Great analysis.
Well, I'm glad I agreed with you, Joe.
Yeah, well, that's the only reason I brought you on. I vetted all your takes in the Twitter DMs. I had to make sure that you weren't going to give Burge any ammo. So I'm really glad that everything went to plan. You followed the script perfectly. I appreciate it.
Glad to be of service.
Well, Manish, I cannot thank you enough. This has been a great time. I looked up at the clock and I was like, holy shit, it's already been 40 minutes. So I really, really appreciate your time. We hope to have you back on. Hopefully. Real quick, I made a bet against Aaron Rodgers that said I would go in the ayahuasca hut if he played football in 23-24. So just want to let you know, we are staunchly invested in what the Jets are doing and what's going on in New York. So, we just want to make sure that we want to open this communication, have you back on again if you're willing. But I just want to thank you again for being so accommodating, so responsive. So I hope you have a great night, man. We appreciate you coming on.
Thanks. I appreciate you guys reaching out to me. This was a lot of fun. And, yeah, reach out anytime. We'll do it again.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah. All right, boys. What's up, folks? Thanks for coming back. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Manish. I think we got into a lot of topics. I think we did a lot in 40 minutes. It's kind of funny right now. We're going to have this recap of the interview, a little quick hit of the interview. And we have a member on the podcast. I didn't even listen to it yet. Kojak.
Hey-o.
Wow. But I think we got into a lot of topics. I think we did a little bit of draft. I think we did a little bit of free agency. I think he gave us a lot of in-depth looks there. I think his insight on when he dropped off the recording, full disclosure, when he jumped off the recording, me, Hogan, and Birch, we're like fangirling, like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And it's like, no offense, Manish, we love you, dude. It's not like we had fucking Tom Brady or Tiger Woods on the fucking episode. You know what I mean? Like, we had a very reputable, like, really good reporter, and we were still fangirling. He was so fucking good. He, the insight he gave, the little nuggets that he had, the analysis that he gave us, he made it abundantly clear that he doesn't watch college football, but he had some very direct takes about what he thinks is going to happen in the draft. I don't know. It was a very good experience. Super nice guy, super accommodating. Couldn't have been easier to get along with. So, Birch, how do you think it went?
Unbelievable. It was great for us to finally land our first interview as a podcast, 21 episodes in. It was unbelievable. I'll echo everything you said. The insight and the conversation that we had was unbelievable. We hope you guys all enjoyed it. Just hearing like you talked about, Joe, the insight about the trade talk was fantastic. Something so I would have never even thought about it. I never would have even thought about it until he kind of broke it down in the way that he did. And it definitely provides a little bit of insight into how the inner workings of the NFL work from us as fans, outsiders, may not necessarily have even thought about. So, yeah. Once again, I just want to say again, thank you to Manish for coming on with us. We look forward to chatting with you again. And let's go.
Hogan, we were just talking about how we were just fangirling after Manish jumped off the recording. And your thoughts?
Oh, my thoughts? I mean, I don't want to ruin it for everybody. As great as the interview was, it was after
everybody's
the
already listened by this point of the podcast. So hopefully.
Oh, no, I know. I'm just saying, as great as the interview was, I'm saying after the interview was even better, getting the dirt that he told us. And, oh, dude. Boy, oh, boy, do I wish I could tell you guys what he said. But,
No way, dude. Loose listening chips, dude. Manish is our boy, bro. No way.
No, it was phenomenal. Manish, thank you so much for coming on, if you're listening. And we absolutely can't wait to have you back and hear some more war stories of what you got some dirt on some players on. But it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal, and we loved it.
So I can't remember if this was in the recording or right before we started, but he started talking about the Baker and Darnold draft.
Yes.
So I didn't really remember. remember how late of a riser Baker was to the mm-hmm. number one seed? It yep. was like after the combine and like after all, like this time of year now, it was after all that stuff. And it's funny because he was a Jets reporter at the time. So he's thinking that they're taking Darnold, right? I don't know. I just found that very interesting because it's sometimes like as like a fan of a team, obviously what 7 years ago, we're all not doing a football podcast. So we're probably honed in a little bit more on the Patriots. You know what I mean? So it's so funny to get like a, especially when we talked to him about the Mac Jones shit, like it's so funny to get like a, an alternate perspective. Cause like you think about it nowadays, dude, like when you open up your phone, like, you can go, like, a lot of people don't get their news from the TV anymore. They get it on their phone, and your phone is curtailed to what you like. So I'm getting 10 times more Patriot stuff on my Twitter feed than I would on any other kind of, like, media. You know what I mean? If you're watching TV, you're getting whatever's happening. You know what I mean? Whatever's popular, whatever's happening. But when you're on your phone, you're, like, getting force-fed, like, the things that you like. So I don't know. I thought it was really cool to have a dissenting opinion, someone who has saw it from the other side. I don't know if you guys have anything else to say. I really can't wait for Kojak to put all this shit together and for us to listen to it because I just think it was he fit right the fucking.
But think about it though, like you're talking about the Darnold situation, the Baker situation, which is what he brought up. Isn't it such a Jets move to trade up in the draft to number three? Because they wanted Baker, and all of a sudden Baker goes one.
And they
get stuck with Darnold. Yeah. Like, that's such a Jets move. Like, when you think about it, like, they trade up in the draft. They're targeting a guy, and the guy goes two picks before where they traded up to. But that just screams Jets. And obviously, how it worked out for the Jets after the fact proves that point. Like,
I think Baker would have excelled in a market like New York.
He may have excelled, but would he have performed like... Well, I mean, the Jets were bad at that point. They didn't have as much offensive talent. Like, it just started the whole thing. I think
Baker, what, 35-year-old Brandon Marshall is enough to make an offense, bro?
Yeah, exactly. So that insight,
do something to you, bro. I'm sorry.
that insight's incredible because it helps prove our, you know, our thoughts on, you know, how badly run that organization has been for so long when you think about it. Like, it makes me think like the fact that they went out and they got Aaron Rodgers, obviously he got hurt last year and we all know how that went down, but like him coming back this year makes me think it's going to be no better. It's just they're going to find a way to screw it up. They always do.
Yeah. The goddamn Jets, right? Shiloh Hogan, what do you think about this interview? You had a good time.
Oh, I had a fantastic time. And honestly, it was funny. The question I had for him about Belichick was kind of off the cusp where I was just thinking like, you know, it'd be great to hear from somebody either not rooted in with the Patriots on their thoughts about Belichick not getting a job after being let go, especially. And I loved how it tied in. Like I kind of dropped that tidbit about, you know, oh, or Belichick had the history with the Jets. So it's like, were you kind of like, I wanted to ask him and be like, were you kind of like happy to see him get stuck with it where you're like, yeah, fuck you, Belichick, you didn't get a job. But no, it was genuinely like interesting to hear that he was just as shocked about Bill not landing a job, and then the whole Atlanta thing, it just sounds like that was kind of cuckoo because, you know, we obviously read the reports about Belichick in the two interviews down there and it sounding like it was a done deal, and then all of a sudden is it Arthur Blank, right? He's mm-hmm. the one coming out and refuting that, being like, it was never on the table, like Raheem Morris was our guy from the get-go, Belichick never had a chance. And it's just like, really?
Bullshit.
Really?
Bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. But no, it's interesting that, like I said, the inside stuff that you can glean from some of these guys that you talk to, whether they're in the business or have been in the business, it was incredible. And like I said, I had an absolute blast.
What was the tidbit he gave about when you asked the Belichick thing? Oh, what the hell? No, I'm just grasping at straws here. But I thought it was unbelievable when just how easy it was. He was very forthcoming with all of his info. It's just it was just all around a great time. You guys, do you really have anything else? I'm gushing right now. I might be the first Manish Mehta super fan. I'm making shirts, dude. That guy was awesome.
Huge milestone for the pod. Huge milestone.
Believe it or not, Joe did not pay him either to come on. That's probably the craziest part about this. The way that Joe is talking about him, he did not pay him to come on.
And DMs.
Hey, it's still a potential. I mean,
And yeah, I don't know. This, like we said, the insight that he gives kind of like out, that's not within the framework of like one of our questions or anything like that. He just goes so in depth. So we really thank him. Hopefully he'll be on again.
He'll be on again. He wants to come on for, to do a little bit more in season stuff. So hopefully you guys will see him again on the pod. Other than that, we're going to plug this MF-er up. Was that the plug hand? Oh my God. Yeah. We're off the rails here. Well, for the BTP podcast, my name is Joe with Burge, Hogan, and Kojak. Hope you guys have a great rest of your night. Thanks for listening this long.